So the citizens legislative session due to all present assistance of the committee and now the authorized to act immediately upon the side of provision of the Senator Bank of Simcoe provided by the limited electronic communication provided with.
So that's just grammatical stuff again.
Okay.
Okay,
next amendment is on page 22 of this document.
Okay, this is the substantive one that I have canvassed with. Now, I don't know, Mr. Yuban, Mr. Delphor. Dr. Delphor told me that he would speak to you about it. Has he done so?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the draft of what it is that you discussed. And this is the stuff that I canvassed with you yesterday as well. Page, where is this now? On page 21, at the bottom, starting there at 9A. Okay? Now remember, what this is meant to do is it's meant to create an exception to the registration of foreigners under certain special circumstances. So it allows the minister through regulation under certain special circumstances to create an exception. Okay? So look at the draft. This is something we have to look at carefully. Go ahead, Mr. Robinson.
Well, the payment stated to provide the equal revenue fees some kind of event in the complex or in the Republic. That the minister, the Minister of Justice, and certain exceptional circumstances after consultation with the Minister of Defence, the Minister of Intelligence Services, and the Minister of the Cabinet Member, the Minister responsible for policing, and the Minister of Education.
The security cluster of ministers, the relevant ministers, are the ministers that are defined in the Principal Act. So that's why we use the term relevant ministers, okay? And those would include all the security cluster ministers, including communications. So it'll be the Minister of Safety and Security, the Minister for Defense, the Minister for Intelligence, and the Minister for Communications. That's it. Okay, so just
after in consultation actually means that there must be some kind of concurrence between the ministers. That the Minister of Justice may then, for a period not exceeding 3 months, exempt electronic communication service provider to comply mainly with the provision of section 42 and 43 of the Act, which relates to certain information that must be captured in the formless system, and section 43 relates to
communication
thereof. Okay, then.
But that's only in respect of persons who are foreigners. And that's why you've got reference to
2D2.
And 2D2, just to refresh your memory, reads as follows. A person who, in the case of a person who is not a South African citizen and who is not permanently resident in the Republic. Okay. So it's literally talking about only that category of individual when we refer to 2D2. Subject to the conditions.
Okay, the minister can the use of discretion in certain conditions that is provided for in section 49B is taken into account. This condition must be raised up again. Security and time consideration of the Republic. The factors are the following: the extent to which the visit to the Republic relates to an international event, suppose something like the Pro-20 World Cricket Cup or the FIFA World Cup. Furthermore, international obligations of the Republic, the relationship between the Republic and the international community. The objective of universal access to electronic communication service and service after visit to the Republic, as well as the number of persons that can be in the Republic. After, well, specifying of the period for which electronic communication service providers is connected in terms of this subsection, when that period expires, they must then proceed and comply with the provisions of the Act. In other words, they must, after that period, again capture the necessary information, whether the person that entered the Republic was initially exempted or not.
You've got there at the moment. Then the international obligations of the Republic, I think, is fine. The relationship between the Republic and the international community, I think that's also fine. The objective of universal access is everything we know. Nolisander? Have you checked with this life story? What do they think? Really outrageous. I don't know why you have a committee room with this, but intercoms here. The objective of universal access to electronic communication service again, you've got the purpose of the visit to the Republic. I think that's captured in the first part, where you've got the extent to which an international event. The number of persons entering the Republic within a particular period, I guess that's okay. On the expiry of the period contemplated in paragraph 8, sections 2 and 3 shall apply to an electronic communicator in respect of which an extension was granted. Upon the expiry of the period contemplated, okay, so what this is saying, members, C, is once that window period is over, your sections 42 and your subsections 42 and 43 kick in again. Immediately thereafter. Now, I mean, that's obvious that this is a doctrine practice to make sure that there's no comeback on that issue. So you have 42 applying from the date of commencement. Then you may have an interruption depending on whether you have a huge event or what it is. And straight after the 3 months, that must continue without anything further having to be done. In other words, no withdrawal of the proclamation on that. So that's basically how this thing is being divided. Anybody want to say anything, Mr. Lyons?
Just one or two questions of clarification. What will make the minister publish the notice? Will it be an application by the person visiting the country? Will it be an application by the service provider? What makes him do that?
This is specifically designed, Mr. Landers, with the idea of the World Cup in mind. Now, this is an enabling clause. The minister may, not that the minister must, but may. That's the minister's discretion. I imagine that what will happen closer to the time is that one of the other ministers may, or cabinet may, take a decision. It's not necessarily a provision that will be used. I mean, I don't even know for the World Cup that it's going to be used. All we're doing here is we're providing for the possibility. But it's not on application from anybody, particularly not the service. It goes to the heart of ensuring whatever successful event that is hosted by the Republic. It may not just be the World Cup, it may be something that happens next week, for example, or 2 weeks after the thing commences, in which case the TSPs may not be ready, or something of that nature. So that's really just what it is. Okay. Okay. Mr. Hubert?
Thank you, Jean. You know that in principle we support the whole piece of legislation. This is the only part with which we have a concern, and I'm not 100% sure whether we address that concern, because I don't know the technical aspects of it. You know that when we travel abroad, if you roam in, wherever you land, when the airplane door is open, you push on your cell phone, they say welcome to London, even direct alarm or whatever, you then on the air. So, if this is applied, then we will be the only country, as far as I can tell, that once you're abroad, you still have to go through a further process, unless the minister has made exceptional circumstances. Now, in practice, I don't understand how it's going to work. So I don't know whether the cell phone people can tell us whether it is actually viable in practice.
Well, the cell phone people tell me that what they do currently is they have agreements with these other telecom service providers internationally, so they can get that information. The problem is a legal problem, as I said over and over. There is no way that you can get this stuff legally. And what they're doing, and you know for a fact that the European Union and the Americas, North America in particular, have very stringent privacy laws. So what is happening at the moment is happening outside of a legal framework. And all we're trying to do is establish a legal framework here. Now, if there is a way that they can get this information electronically through just, you know, putting on your activating your cell phone, and you can share that information, get it from wherever. That's a how. And my interest is not in a how. My interest is in establishing a legal framework in terms of which people either operate within or without. At the moment, everybody is without a legal framework. Now, I hear what you're saying about going everywhere in the world. My view is that I don't think that we've done sufficient research. The problem is, and I've asked Ms. Wood and Mr. Robertson to do research on this matter, the difficulty is that many countries that have it, and we're not just talking about the legal countries such as your England and your America, but there are many countries, the ministers just come back from Rome, where they also have in Italy quite a stringent system. The problem is that we can't get easy access to it in terms of research because a lot of these countries don't have legislation. What they do is in the terms and conditions of the license that is granted to these people, they make provision for them in the terms and conditions of the license. It's not very easy for us to access on the internet or whatever it is. So I'm told, you know, the jury's still out as to whether in fact we're the only country that's going to do it. It just seems implausible to me, though. If we think about what we are doing, We are requiring every South African who is permanently here to register their details against the cell phone, why? So that we can prove ownership if it becomes necessary. Now, you then create a regime alongside that to say that we exempt all foreigners from being included in the register. Question is, why then bother with the legislation up front? Because what that does is that it creates a loophole. Anybody, as I've explained before, can flip over to Swaziland if you have an Al-Qaeda network or whatever it is. I mean, they're not going to come into the country and try and comply with laws. They're going to go out to Swaziland, get all their phones and get their connectivity happening there, come into the country, and they're completely out of the loop. And so the problem then is that you are actually creating a legal loophole where criminals can actually operate quite easily. And what it would seem to me as a legislature you don't want to do is to necessarily consciously develop a loophole of that nature. And there's no other way to do it. I mean, if anybody came to me and said, here's another viable option, try this option. The whole purpose of this legislation, you would be a member, is we are trying to accommodate the service providers. This stuff was already in the legislation that we passed in 2003. The only reason we have this amendment, ostensibly the only reason we have this amendment, is because the service providers came to the executive and said, we have a better way of doing it. We're doing it electronically. And that's why we amended this legislation for no reason. But obviously things have opened up during the public participation process where they're dealing with things like addresses and whatever. And we've tried to accommodate that as far as possible. But I cannot see any other way to legislate. And if you look at how we draft it, we don't draft around the how. All we say in the legislation is before anybody can be activated on anybody's service, their details must be registered. So we don't even legislate how it is that that's going to happen. And there may be technologies out there that other countries use that these people in South Africa can learn from and so on. But I don't have access to that.
I quite understand that, Jim. My concern is the how, because I don't want the situation where South Africa is the only country when a visitor from abroad lands here has to go and queue and register his cell phone and things. That should be done in the bigger system by the service providers beforehand, so that as we do when you land there, you can just do it.
I would agree with you. And I think if there's a way to do it, then they should do it that way. And I think that they understand the convenience factor, big factor. As I say, nothing's going to prevent them from finding creative ways to do it. And I'm quite sure that other countries do it, it's just that we haven't got access to the legislation. Because as I say, in many parts of the world, what happens is that the stuff is captured in their terms and conditions related to their licensing. And that's not very easy for us to access, even over the internet. I mean, I found some very interesting, you might want to look at some of the research that we've done. There's some very interesting stuff. For example, in Japan, Japan at the time that we got our research, which was last year really, was contemplating issuing, making it illegal for prepaid to operate in Japan. Now, there must be a reason for that. And the reason is that they can't get those people off the system by whatever system those electronic service providers they use. So they're interesting quirks around the world. But as I said, the problem is that the research is not terribly comprehensive because we just can't get easy access to research because most of it is done in terms of either bylaws, not bylaws, regulation, subordinate legislation, or in the conditions in terms of licensing. I mean, a few countries where they actually have separate laws that don't pertain directly to the licensing. And we're obviously going to follow that model because clearly our licensing
provide therefore that it will only be applicable where a university person
actually give a set of the time or some card to these employees. Next to the amendment, there too was also page 25. It's amendment to subsection 2A. Any contextual redrafting of the section, subsection 2A. And on page 26, we inserted the reference to section 40.
Hang on a minute before you go away from 62. Let me just have a look at that.
Should it read plus record or record?
Any person who rents a SIM card or cellular phone to another person must, before handing over the cellular phone or SIM card to the other person, record the particulars as required in terms of 42. And 42 talks about the person and the cell phone and equipment and so on, and the date on which, the period for which the cellular phone and SIM card is placed. Is that what you were talking about, Mr. Lance? Is that part?
No, sure.
Which part?
Sub 1. It says a juristic person must keep proper record. Rights, or should it be records?
Record. Everyone's nodding their head, but I'm not getting the answer. Recording you, record.
Yeah.
Now, hang on a sec. Do I read this to mean that a juristic person who has an activated phone with a SIM card must then keep records of the employee, or do I read it to mean that they must keep the records in accordance?
Well, it's in terms of section 42.
Okay. You might just suffer for my sin.
In terms of section 42 and 66, the information is by a telecommunications service provider. Once a juristic person actually hands a cell phone or a SIM card to another person, must also keep record of the equipment set out in
the case. Okay, the way I read it is that it's just the particulars of the person.
But I'm sure you could already mean the particulars of the card,
the phone and so on would have been there.
Just to make sure when I give it out to the juristic person, whether you gave it out to employee A, B, or C, and when did you do it? So that you can keep
it. Must identify the cell phone and the SIM card that came into it for you.
Let's deliver it report. Is that information you'll give on what is called historic information? The information that is current, what is that information?
Real-time
communication. You'll get that is when the phone was used. All you'll need is for the employer to keep the details of who has the phone at a particular time. Okay, next.
Okay, the commencement clause.
You've got 26.
Yes.
So that's just consequential.
believe previous ministry, we were requested to look at implementation of rules whereby it would be possible to implement the goal. So almost simultaneously after it is presented to you by the President and published in the Gazette. Section 63(1) of the Act has been retained, which provides that the provisions of the ICA Act must be put into operation by proclamation in the Gazette by the President. We actually added Section 63(2) to the original one.
Quite enjoying you suffering through this explanation. But when Ms. Boer had tried to explain it to me just before the meeting, it sounded as bizarre as you are. Now. But let me then try and take members, and this is basically what this is, members. It's the product of over legalistic minds. Okay?
They're all sitting on this side.
This is where belt and braces are the legal side. What does it say? 63.1, if you look at that 63.1 that is highlighted, that whole part is currently in the Act. Okay? The only part that is not in the Act, in that paragraph, is the thing in brackets that says number one. So we highlight the whole portion because we're adding the number one. Okay? And it's 63 in the principal act did not have a sub two. So we are adding a sub two. Okay? Now what does sub two mean? Is the big question. From what I can gather from the legal mind amongst us, who are cleverer and so on, is this, that the Principal Act has a 40 and a 60, which is not coming to operation. Okay? So what this does is it says that old 60 and that old 40, which we are now in any case of ending completely, will come into being when we pass this legislation. And what that will do is, in effect, it will allow our amendments to actually have some effect, because the old 40 and the old 60 will now come into operation. Our Act will amend the old 40 and the old 60. And really, that's how they do it in legal terms. And then they've given you a short title and commencement of this legislation. In other words, that short title and commencement is replacing the Principal Act first. Then for the purposes of this Act, we have a short title and commencement. And for the purposes of this Act is called the Regulation of Interception of Communications and Provision of Communication-Related Information Amendment Act 2007, and will come into operation on the 1st of January 2008, or on such earlier date that the President may proclaim. How about that?
Brilliant.
Okay, so basically we need both those paragraphs. Okay, now what we've done is we've gone through those amendments. What we're now going to do is we're going to go through a process of choosing the options. Okay? Now, normally what would happen is that we would choose the options, they would take those options and transcribe them into a document for us on which we would vote. Now I need you all just to bear with us because we won't have time to do that. We won't be able to choose the option to send them away and bring another document on which we will vote. So I need you all to make very clear notes on your document as you've got it, so that when we get to the stage of voting, you will know that we are voting for those options that we have chosen. Okay? And what you'll then do is I will put the bill to you as we have discussed, and you will then get a copy in your pigeonholes already on Monday, hopefully. So in other words, all of those options on the bill that you would have voted for will only be in your pigeonholes on Monday. Now this is unusual for us, but because we won't be able to sit next week, we've had to take this week, okay? Everybody happy?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's proceed. I'm going to go clause by clause. And this is your absolute last opportunity. If you want to make any amendments, you want to raise any questions, you're now able to do so, okay? But we're going to go pretty quickly because we've been through this stuff about 210 times. I'm going to allow everybody to just settle in and tell me when you're ready. Legal drafters, you happy? Okay? Just tell me if I've missed something, please. Eh? We go on to section 40. Section 40, please note that you have a sub 1. You'll see there on page 9 of your documents, which is underlined. Then you have something called an option 1. Now, both of them are essentially saying the same thing, except that it's stylistic. Okay? From the ANC side, I believe that it is option 1. Thank you very much, Emma. Matthew Bass?
Thank you.
Exactly. So that's just stylistic. So far, so good. Then we are on option, sub 2. Page 10. Now there, we are going for option. No. Let me just check here. Option 3. Go to your option 3. Check in your previous documents, members.
Page 5.
Yep.
Okay.
Am I correct? Oh, okay. No, okay. Sorry about that. It's option 1. I should just listen to you, members. Okay, the reason why we can't use option 3, Mr. Hubert, is that it is the one that has the address of the family member and with the affidavits and so on, and remember we want to get away from the paper trail. Option 1. Good. This is the full name. Happy, next is sub 3. Which option are we going for there, Emma? Page 13. You can't help me. That's terrible. Option 6. Thank you, Emma. Option 6 is just neater in the sense that what it does is it breaks down each category of individual. And particularly if we're going to go for this new option where the minister can engage a window period, it's important because of the reference language of foreigners, which is separate from the rest of the options, okay? So option 6 is the one that we go for, Mr. Yuvan. Fine? Okay, good. Then, you've got an option there. We're going for option 3. That is correct. Thank you, Mr. Landers. That basically, Mr. Yugan, remember, is the one that says the facilities on which the data is stored must be secured, and then it must really be at the behest of the telecommunication service provider. But then in option 3, what we've done is that we've given an enabling clause to allow the minister, where it becomes necessary, to, through regulations, make provision for what specifications there needs to be in terms of security. So, for example, if a court decision comes, then that's fine. Okay. Option 3 is now, the next one is the issue with regard to the handing over of phones by individuals to people other than family members. And here we go for option 3, which is on page 19. Okay? And you'll see that that one has an amendment there, which is must immediately upon the sale or provision of. Okay, see you there.
That's fine.
Fine, good. Then, somebody hands over a phone to somebody else, what the responsibility on the part of the telecommunications service provider is. And here we go for option 3, Bima. Is that right? Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Yuman, you with us? This is, let me, on page 20, yeah. You with me? Happy, Mr. Yuman? Okay, lovely. Then we've got a sub 7, and there is your 39 story, which is really what happens when somebody wants to make an application to court. What information must then be forwarded. Now just remind me, Ms. Bertha, the differences between those ones. Am I right that it was option 3, which is the restating of 39 rather than just referring to the old 39? Okay, so in other words, nothing's changed from the principal act. All we're doing in option 3 is just, because the problem with 39 is that it was worded to cover both internet and other kinds of community. And we then had to work with words that says where relevant 39 applies. So what option 3 does is it really restates 39, but specifically for cell phone providers. So that there's no confusion as to what is relevant and what is not. Okay?
Option 3
it is. Okay, then we've got the duties on the person who has found that or suspects that something is false, like an identity document. We are going for option 1 at this stage because we feel that option 2 is just far too complex. If a reasonable person in the position of, all we do there is we say, if an employee or agent of an electronic service knows of the state that an ID document submitted for verification is false, he or she must within 24 hours report the matter to a police official at the police station. Option 1. It's me. Okay. So far, there's too much of agreement. That's too much. It's unbearable. I'm feeling hot.
That's
some water chips.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you've got this new insertion which we've just done. There's no option here except for the changes that we've made, and I trust everybody has taken note of those changes. Are we happy with that? That's fine. Okay. Okay. Then we don't have in sub 3, we don't have options. So I take it that sub 3 is agreeable at this stage. Oh my goodness, you know what we forgot to do is to talk about 36. Mr. Robertson forgot to say that if you look at your previous draft, there is a clause 56 there that talks to the issue of, remember this is the clause that deals with sanctions. So if you fail to register people and you fail to keep the information secure and so on. Now, in the Principal Act, there is a section 56 that says the Minister of Communications may withdraw the license of a telecommunications service provider if they don't comply with A, B, and C. Now, the problem with that is I've asked Ms. Bertha and Mr. Robertson to double-check for us, and they found it a bit difficult to do so. Because there is a suggestion that it's not the Minister that revokes the license. It's actually the independent authority. So what we've done now is they, and I said to them, go check the communications legislation and see where that authority lies. And they're finding it a bit difficult because it's a whole complex myriad of laws and some laws and regulations and ministerial directions. So what I've told them is to take it out at the moment, and they can then deal with that research in the NCOP when the NCOP deals with the thing. Okay? So you'll find that there is a difference between your previous draft and this draft, because your previous draft will have that 56. We've taken it out completely, but it may come back to us, because remember, this is a Section 75 legislation. The NCOP can't make amendments. They can only suggest amendments to us. So they're going to use that time in the NCOP to do this research, and if they then think it's still necessary, they're going to come back to us with the 56 with to approve or not approve. Okay? So for the time being, we've taken it out here. Okay?
Not
material, because it's the sanction thing. We did, however, add all of these things that we've now done, and we said if they don't comply with the things that we've done now, their license can get revoked, and there may be a problem with that, because in terms of proportionality, we sanction them currently. Remember, it's 100,000 per day that they are falling foul of the legislation, but in addition to which is the revoking of the license. So what I said to them, even that proportionality may be a bit wrong. It's only if the equipment, remember in the Principal Act, they are meant to get certain equipment so that the communications are interceptable. And if they fail to get that equipment, then the license should be in jeopardy, if you would think. So that will come back to us if there is some need to change it, okay? Just please note that for all of your purposes. At the moment, it's not here, doesn't feature, and for our purposes, it's irrelevant at the moment. Okay, sorry, Mr. Robertson, you were wanting to add something? No? Okay. Where are we? We are on the amendment of Section 51 on page 22. There we don't really have options. These are all the sanctions, remember, contraventions. And because they're different contraventions that apply to different people, firstly, your service providers in terms of 42s and 62s and so on, then your juristic persons, then the people who are employees who don't report a false ID document, all of those are captured separately in Task 3. Anybody has any problems with that? Can we agree to that clause as a whole? Happy? Okay. Then we come to the amendment of Section 62. There again, we don't have any options. We do have an option in D, but look, your 6A is your 6A. Okay? Then you've got your 6B, 6C, 6D, which is essentially mirroring the obligations with regard to 42 when it comes to people who are currently customers. So that's what 60 does, right? Then the option is in D. You've got an option for if they don't comply. Remember, people who are currently customers, they have 12 months from the commencement of the Act and this provision to register people who are currently customers. Now that will be 12 months in terms of this legislation beginning at least by the 1st of January next year. If they don't comply within the 12 months, then there are two options. The one is the option D, and which doesn't say option, but it's just D. And then the other one says option D. Now from the ANC side, Mr. Umar, we are going for the option D, which is your second D. You with me? 24, that's it.
The second D
is what we're going for. Yeah. Okay, happy. Good. Then we go to determination of tariffs. We've got options there. and there we are going for option 2, which is your 62A on page 25. And the only difference between the two clauses are persons employed and or used and or all of those interchangeable terms. Yeah, that's also true. That's also option two. Okay, lovely. Legal drafters, you've got that? Lovely. Information to be provided to customers. All of those things is captured in 62B. There's no options there really. And that's something that we've included though as the committee. So everybody happy with that?
Yeah.
Good. Keeping of information by juristic persons and persons who lease some cars or cellular phones. This is the stuff that we've gone through today. Everybody happy with that?
Yes.
Thank you. And then, our favorite clauses in the bill. The short title and commencement number one, short title and commencement number two. Agreed to both of them. Happy? Okay, done. Now, what I'm going to do is, I don't know if you read, I'm going to give you an opportunity if you want to say something formally for the record now.
As I said in the beginning, in principle, we really support this whole piece of legislation. Our only concern is when it comes to the effect it may have economically or otherwise on the roading. And if we can sort that out, we will be happy. But at this stage, I would like for you to just make our concern.
Happy to do that. Thank you very much. Anybody else have anything to say finally on the thing before I put the vote? Okay. Now remember, members, what we're doing is usually we would have a document with these options together. We don't have such a document now, that's why I said please take detailed notes in your document here. So I'm now going to formally do the, what is the thing called, the what of motion? Motion of desirability. Portfolio Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development, having considered the regulation of interception of communication, provision of communication related information amendment bill of, what is it, 2006. I put the question, those in favor? Okay. Unanimous. No reason to ask for abstentions, no reason to ask for those who are opposed. Committee Secretary, you've got all those details? Oh, by the way, I didn't ask for who's moving. Let's do it again. I'm putting the question, a mover, Mr. Landers, Shaker, Mr. Yubad, and then the vote is unanimous, I take it. Yes?
Yes.
Thank you very much with your concern, Mr. Yuman. The memo of the other. What I'm also, what I need to just say to you is that usually when we do that document with the options that we've chosen, you have a memorandum of objects attached to it. You remember that part that comes at the back. Now, usually what we do is we go through that memorandum of objects, but also we have been known on occasion to say, can the chair then just be delegated to look at that? Can we have a move on that? Thank you. Seconder? Thank you. It's just basically explaining what is in the legislation in words, okay? So thank you very much. Did we have agreement on that? Thank you very much. Look, thank you very much, members. It's been a terribly trying bill, frankly, even though it's not the biggest bill that we've ever passed. And I know it's been very stressful, and I really want to thank you all for your cooperation, particularly those members who've taken the trouble to attend regularly so that we don't lose the train of thought. You would recall that this legislation has been with us since June of 2006. And it's been a long haul. So, thank you very much. We will, of course, not be able to debate this particular bill in the House this term, because our last sitting in the House was yesterday. What we will try and do is get it on the order paper of the National Assembly at the first sitting. Please note, at the first sitting of the House next term. Okay? So please prepare for your debates and so on. Don't say I didn't notify you and whatever. So use this recess, prepare your speeches, do whatever you need to do, do what politicians do best, so that when we come back, we'll probably have a committee week in any case, and I will be able to remind you. But in case I don't, please take note of that, all right? And then remember this one is going to the NCOP, and that we may have a comeback on that 36. Anything further from anybody at this stage? So last meeting for this term. Let me wish you all a wonderful recess. I won't see you next week because I will be at the policy conference, so I won't be convening any meetings. I do want to wish you all a good rest if you can get some in. Spend a lot of time with your families and make up for all of your sins. And those of you who are going to be on the road, please make sure that you drive carefully and so on. So take care of yourself, and we will see you, God willing, when we get back. Thank you very much.